from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
In an era in which overworked priests are grappling with issues of morale and sometimes indifferent parishes, a diocese in Massachusetts has turned to the perfect person for help. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Bishop Edgar de Cunha of Fall River to talk about how priests and seminarians of the Diocese of Fall River have consecrated themselves to St. John Vianney. And then we're joined by Register senior writer Zelda Caldwell, who tells us about Catholic hubs thriving across the country. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. I'm here in our Washington, D.C. studios, as always, with my co-host, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, Matthew.
Hope your summer's progressing. It's coming to an end, I know.
It's going fast.
Well, as we recently reported, 70 priests and 5 seminarians of the Diocese of Fall River recently consecrated themselves to St. John Vianney, the Curia of Ars, the patron saint of parish priests. This is a pretty remarkable solution to the challenges of today for priests and future priests, and it comes as the Church celebrates this year the 100th anniversary of Vianney's canonization. To tell us about this powerful spiritual and pastoral initiative, we're joined by Bishop Edgar de Cunha, Bishop of Fall River. Your Excellency, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Well, let's start with this initiative, because it strikes me as a very important one, given the real challenges that people have in terms of pastoral ministry among your priests. How did this initiative come to be?
Well, it kind of reflecting on a survey that was done by Catholic University a few years ago about the status of the priesthood in the United States, and was a very thorough study. And reflecting on that study and then analyzing it, we began to discuss what we could do in our diocese to help our priests and to help the parishes and the diocese and the church as a whole. And most of the programs and initiatives that we have about parish revitalization focus on bringing people back to the church and evangelizing. And we thought that we could begin with the priest, because without having a strong priest and holy priest and priests who are happy in their ministries and prayerful and all those things emotionally and physically well, those things are vital and really critical for the revitalization of the church. So that's why we decided to begin our focus with the priest, to renew, revitalize, strengthen them, make sure that they have a healthy spiritual, physical, emotional life, relationship with each other, with the bishops, and with the people they serve.
Your Excellency, I know a lot of people who read this story were very moved by this initiative. It, you know, for one thing, it just signals to your priests, but also to the wider Catholic community there in Massachusetts, that priests are men, not machines. They need our support, and that you, as their bishop, really cared about their welfare. So I congratulate you on that. Why don't we talk a little bit about how St. John Vianney fits into this? As the Register story mentions, I think the idea came from a layman on your staff, Matt Robinson, who thought that St. John Vianney would be a perfect patron for this initiative. Can you tell us why?
Well, we all know St. John Vianney is the patron saint of parish priests. We know that St. John Vianney lived the challenges and difficulties and struggles that priests today experience. We know that St. John Vianney is a model of revitalization of a parish that he found in ours that was in dire need of spiritual renewal and re-energize and revitalize. And he, with his humility and his simple life, but with his profound love for God and for the church, and his profound holiness is a model for priests today. And for we thought that having our priests consecrate themselves to Saint John Vianney and they embrace him as an intercessor in heaven, but also as a model for us also to imitate and to follow, would be a wonderful way to strengthen this initiative that we have started in the diocese. And I, honestly, when we thought first the idea, I didn't realize the impact that was going to make and the attention that he received. And then we were able to contact the bishop of the diocese in France, where Arns is, and he wrote a beautiful letter to our priest that day. He mentioned at Mass that morning that he was praying for the priest of Fall River. So that connection with the church in Arns and that connection with the bishop that reached out to us, and with that support that showed to our priest. And I invited a bishop friend to come and speak to the priest that day, and how inspiring he was, and inspired he was also to be a part of it. So all those things, and the time together that followed, the sharing dinner together, it just came together beautifully. We kind of modeled the consecration as part of the when people take religious vows or part of the rite of ordination. So we took some of those rites and incorporated into our own rite of consecration that really came up beautifully.
Yeah, Your Excellency, as you note, this is different from asking for intercession. This is an actual consecration. Why a consecration? And from your standpoint, what's the difference, and why is that so important in terms of this effort?
Yeah, well, when you just pray for intercession, but an act of consecration means I am giving myself. I'm making an act of consecration. I'm making a promise. I'm making a commitment. So it's not just asking the saint to do something. I'm also doing something. I want to imitate your virtues and your holiness, and I'm making this publicly. So some people ask me too, why do as a group, as a clergy, as a diocese, rather than an individual? I said, but when you do something together, there is a power in the sense of community and in the sense of doing publicly. Because when we do publicly, like when people take vows, they take publicly. When people get married, they usually do publicly. When people are ordained, they do publicly, because the public witness enhances and strengthens the commitment that one is making. So by doing that as a whole diocese together, it made it much more powerfully accepted, embraced by the priest, and a sense of commitment on their part that this is a public statement we are making. It's a public commitment we are making. So witnesses to them and to the rest of the diocese that they are willing to make that commitment and that promise.
Your Excellency, the story mentions that about half of your active priests in the diocese have more than one full-time assignment. That means they either have multiple parishes that they're in charge of, or they have more than one role in the diocese, a pastor and maybe some other kind of role. This is common, I know, throughout the country. I read a statistic from the Integrated Life Foundation, which reports that 60% of priests under the age of 45 are experiencing a burnout. So that's a very worrisome statistic. What do you hear from your fellow bishops about this problem?
Well, we know that there is a general sense of priests being overwhelmed with responsibilities and work. And what happened is that we kept just the number of priests have decreased, as we all know, And then we just kept adding more responsibility to the priests. Well, adding responsibilities is not necessarily a bad thing, but the question is, how do you manage that in a healthy way? I can be managing one small parish and feel overwhelmed, and I can be managing two or three parishes and yet feel energized and strengthened. Depends how my prayer life is, how my circle of support is, how I involve the laity and the staff in managing the work, especially the administration part, things that lay people can do that doesn't require ordination to do. So all those things are important that we face, that we take a look at, and that's part of what our initiative is doing, because we can't make more priests than we are able to find, but we can load or lessen or lighten their load by aligning their responsibilities and involve lay people and staff to everyone embrace the mission, so that the priest doesn't feel overwhelmed. Because if the priest is not well, then the parish suffers.
Yeah, Your Excellency, if you don't mind my asking, can you talk a little bit about your own experience with this initiative and what St. John Vianney means to you?
Well, I always had a special devotion to St. John Vianney from my early days as a seminarian in my formation. I always saw St. John Vianney as such an example and model for us, and I always pray to St. John Vianney. And when we started this initiative here in our diocese, I was really glad to see that we had such a hopeful initiative for our priests, because without a healthy priest, you won't have healthy parishes and a healthy church. And therefore, I am investing my time, my energies, my support to the priest. They know I'm available to them. They know they can reach out to me at any time. They have my cell phone. They have all my email. They have all access to me. And we are already seeing results in this initiative, even though we are at the very early stages. But we see already the difference in the spirit of among the priests, and that sense of hope and enthusiasm, and connecting to the diocese, to the bishop, to each other, that we really sense a difference already. And I'm so grateful to see that the fruits have been already born.
Well, Your Excellency, thank you so much again for your time. And I know that so many of our listeners are going to be praying for this initiative, for your diocese, and for their priests in their own diocese. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bishop Edgar de Cunha, Bishop of Fall River. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next, we talk with Zelda Caldwell, Register senior writer, about Catholic hubs across the country. Stay tuned to Register Radio here on EWTN.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio, along with my co-host Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. And while we hear a lot about dioceses consolidating parishes, selling off church properties, apparently shrinking, the truth is that the church in the United States is far from in decline. In fact, it feeds into a misperception, as we write in the Register, that the Catholic Church in the U.S. is in decline. While it's true that some of the historic strongholds of Catholicism have waned, especially in metro areas in the Northeast and Midwest, Catholic life is flourishing in other parts of the country. This brings us to a fascinating series of reports that we're going to be covering now in the National Catholic Register over the next months, New Catholic Hubs. So tell us about that, Shannon.
Yes. Well, you know, first I think it's important to acknowledge the depressing side of the news that we have to report, mm-hmm. you know, at the Register and EWTN is there's nothing sadder than hearing about a parish that is being shuttered, or the worst of all is when a beautiful church is being decommissioned, deconsecrated.
And I know you've written especially about that.
Yeah. And gosh, that's so sad. And some of them are in horrible shape, right? But others of them are beautiful. And so I want to acknowledge that part. We write a lot about those kinds of stories. But that's not the full story. The full story is that there's many parts of the country and some big cities, some little communities where the faith is flourishing in a way that I think people are yearning for. We've been through, you know, a couple decades of people cocooning in their homes and in their rooms and everybody, all the kids watching different screens and things like that and not knowing each other's neighbors, you know, just people across the street. I think we're tired of that, especially at this stage. Serious-minded Catholics, Catholics who are trying, you know, they're not saints, but they're trying to live an integrated Catholic life. They're trying to raise their children right. They can't do it alone. They need community. They're yearning for that. And there are a lot of places around the country that that offer that to them.
Yeah, which brings us to the first in what's going to be a series of reports on Catholic hubs. And that brings us to Zelda Caldwell, National Catholic Register senior writer. So, Zelda, welcome back to Register Radio. I know you had the task of looking at Cheverly, Maryland as one of those new Catholic hubs.
That's right. We first heard about Cheverly because when we were thinking about doing this series, we were asking a lot of people, where are the Catholic hubs? And the town of Cheverly, Maryland kept coming up. Many people have heard about Hyattsville, Maryland, highlighted in Roger's book, The Benedict Option. That's a thriving, intentional Catholic community, but in Washington, D.C., but it's become fairly expensive. So a lot of young families have sort of gravitated to this new hub called in Cheverly, Maryland, a few miles away. And it's not just Catholics, there are Anglicans, there are other Christians. So rather than an intentional Catholic community, it's an intentional Christian community.
Yeah, and in some of the hubs that, as your story says, in some of the hubs that we're going to be profiling in the months ahead, it's very obvious that there's a lot of growth, right? You drive around and you're going to see new parishes, maybe a new school popping up, new apostolates and things like that. Cheverly, in your piece, really talks about community building, but that needs to be unpacked a little bit. So what do we mean by intentional community building, Zelda?
Well, in Cheverly, it's not very big. The town is only 6,000 people, and this intentional community is maybe 100 families. And what they do is they're not just, you know, going to church together. They are having book groups together, you know, men's book groups, women's group book groups, usually around books about the faith or about problems facing everybody, such as technology and what to do about cell phones for your kids. And then they'll have Bible study. A lot of them homeschool, and they are in the same homeschooling program. They have the same curriculum, and they meet up at the park and they'll celebrate liturgical days in the church at their homes. They'll have barbecues. They have talks. They'll bring in priests. Even the, you know, people in different Christian faiths will get together, and they'll have a, you know, there's one family that invited a Dominican priest in for a couple talks about the faith, and which led to discussion. And so they do things. It's not just having parties and going to church. They do things to come together as a community, and they have fun. They went on, I think 100 people went on a camping trip with babies and toddlers.
Wow.
Yeah. They are also there for each other. They have text groups and listservs. So if someone needs a babysitter at the last minute or someone's sick and needs, their older kids taken care of, their neighbors who are there for each other and they help each other.
Yeah. Shannon, you used the phrase a couple minutes ago of an integrated Catholic life. And one of the things that is striking about this type of community, and to use that phrase again, intentional community, is the idea of Catholic culture influencing or shaping wider culture. How is that playing out here? Can we see the results of that in broader or secular regular life?
In Cheverly, I spoke with one woman who actually grew up in Cheverly, and she had sort of left the church and had come back to her family home. And she said that she returned to the church because she was inspired by what was going on around her. And she compared it to what she called sort of a cultural Catholicism of her upbringing, which was great, but she'd never seen anything like this. And so today she's teaching at the Catholic school, St. Ambrose there. She's involved in the community. And so in that sense, it has affected the culture. I'm not sure that it has affected those who aren't part of this Christian community, but who knows, who knows how it is. It probably has at some level.
Yeah, Zelda, to me, one thing that, because we've talked a lot about, well, what's the criteria for a hub and what does it have to have? And to an extent, we're kind of making it up as we go along a little bit, because it is different. There's going to be different types of communities. And we want to be clear, people aren't, there's not some sort of larger community with a set of principles or, something that is a religious community. It's just there's a lot of people there from who have shared feelings and values. But to me, it was that in your piece, the parish kind of played it's got kind of in the background. And that's, to me, is what an integrated Catholic life is. It's not just about Sunday.
Yes, that's right. In a way, it's a bit of an accident. A lot of the people who've moved to Cheverly to be part of this community came from, say, Capitol Hill in Washington, and they already had a church that they had become attached to. And then, as I said, there are people from different faiths. It's not just Catholics. So while they'll go to St. Ambrose, the parish that's in Cheverly, for daily mass and for adoration, that's not where, and they'll go for like the spaghetti dinner that attracts the entire community. That's not the center of the community. It's the friendships that they've made with other families, all these book groups, Bible studies, social activities. There's a community pool that's very popular there. And I think there's a 7-year waiting list. And this group has a regular Friday night happy hour there in the summer. So they're living their daily life, their social life in a Christian way, in community. And a lot of them I spoke to, I asked, how is this compared to your upbringing? And every single one indicated that this was something that was, they felt was lacking in their upbringing. Either they were like part of a very small homeschool community and they felt they only had 3 or 4 families that they knew, or they felt like they didn't have woman was a, her family converted to the Catholic faith. So they had absolutely no friends who were Christians. And so all of them were yearning for this community and searching for it, and that's how it happened. There, it started with a few families, and they told other families, and so now it's to the point where someone listening to this radio show could go on Zillow and find a house and say, hey, I might want to live there. And they would, it wouldn't be too hard to enter into this community.
Yeah, so we may be looking at a real estate, a Catholic real estate boom on top of these new Catholic hubs. Well, Zelda, thank you so much for this. And I look forward to your reporting and a lot more reporting on these Catholic hubs coming up.
Okay, great talking to you. Thank you.
Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much, as always, for joining us here on Register Radio, here on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please, take care, and God bless.